Welcome to another live recording of Zippy the Wonder Snail. It is so good to be with you, Comrade Jason.
Hey, Tim. How's it going?
I'm doing well. I'm so glad. The only thing I'm not glad about this episode is that while it's not going to be the last live recorded episode that will be appearing online, it is the last live recorded episode that we're doing over the summer, and I'm not glad about that.
Plus, you have to dodge that incoming lawsuit from Jim Nance since you're stealing his catchphrase for the 10th week in a row.
Well, I'm going to make sure that he sees that you wrote the script for that. I'll go ahead and forge that.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well done. Well done.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do what I can. And friends, we're so glad to be with you two Christian guys zipping through the news and culture that matter to you. Lighthearted beginning such as it is aside, we do want to start this episode talking about something heavy. Thankfully, this is not something that we have to talk about on a regular basis on Zippy the Wonder Snail. I hope it never is, but this episode, we're recording the day after the assassination attempt on President Trump, and that's a heavy thing upon our nation, our world, and something that we really need to talk about, don't we, Comrade?
Yeah, what a terrible thing. And we don't know a lot about the guy who did this as yet, but he died as well. And there was one other innocent who died. He was a father of at least one daughter. I saw her post on Facebook praising her dad as like the best dad ever. A believing Christian. I believe his name was Corey. I might have to look it up, but he was only 50 years old. It was really sad. And whatever this guy's beef with Trump was, this other guy had no part in that. So that's, you know, evil and sad and all sorts of things. And we're thankful that President Trump is okay. And one thing we for sure wanted to say is we both renounce political violence of all kinds. And this should have no part in our political system. And it does not matter what side you're on or who you favor. The beginning and the end of a functioning representative constitutional democracy is a commitment to nonviolence. So this is horrible. This happened, and I agree with Speaker Johnson and Speaker Pelosi and several others who said we need to turn down the temperature a little bit on the rhetoric and get to the bottom of who this guy was and try to prevent anything like this from happening again.
Yes. Yeah. The turning down of temperature, it's something I can't say I'm overly optimistic is going to happen, but I think what we've been watching, especially it feels like over the last decade or so, is a constant attempt of each side to up the ante on political rhetoric against the other side. And we see this building and this continued emphasis on hatred of each other, right? We've gone from a past where, sure, the political parties opposed each other, but there was a lot more camaraderie to where we often are presenting the other side as an existential, utter threat to everything that is good and true and American, and they want to kill kittens and apple pies. And it certainly should be, and we hope, a reminder that that's not, I think, what any of us really want our nation to be. It certainly as Christians, not what we should be aspiring to encourage. And I think, again, I'm not overly optimistic, but I do hope that maybe it's a chance for a reset.
And I mean, it starts with us, you know, whether or not we can convince everyone else to, as we say, lift up holy hands for all of those in authority. and show proper respect to the governing authorities and everything that we see in scripture.
Yes.
But it starts with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
We kind of teased this slogan when it came out, but I think it was Gandhi that said, "Be the change you want to see in the world," and Obama got hold of that a while back. Well, we have to be the change we want to see. We know who Christ is asking us to be. We just have to do it,
Yeah,
you know?
absolutely.
So let's start with that and be thankful that, except for the one guy, the one father, everybody's okay. There are two people also seriously injured, so we need to pray for them.
Yes.
But it could have been a lot worse, and hopefully we won't have anything like this again that we need to talk about.
Yes. I suppose this is the second significant attack against a particular individual concerning political violence in this last little period. Obviously, I heard some of the coverage last night, and I think they were missing the fact that it's certainly not the first time this has happened, right? Because we had a president, we've had multiple presidents assassinated, most recently President Kennedy. We've had plenty of assassination attempts, including the successful shooting of President Reagan. Thankfully, he was okay. He recovered, but I mean, someone managed to shoot him. So we've had those sorts of things. But just in this last little period, we had the attack that was intended for Speaker Pelosi, the then Speaker of the House, that was then focused on her husband, who has injuries that I believe are going to remain the rest of his life from that attack.
Right.
And she had a very heartfelt, X or tweet, whatever we want to call it, out last night regarding what happened, because I mean, this is something she clearly understands personally, and she very clearly condemned it like the others are doing. But you could tell that it was coming from a place of having experienced that in your own family, and how that feels.
We've had many numerous examples. We haven't lost presidents, but Gabby Giffords was
Yeah.
shot by a guy, Representative Giffords, and then Steve Scalise from Louisiana was
Yes.
shot. And so it is happening, you know, and there are lots of different attempts. It's very sad, and usually the people are mentally ill in some respect,
Yes.
but it's too much, and we've got to do our best to make it different, to
Yeah.
not have it turn out the way it has.
And I do think, just like you were saying a bit ago about being the change, certainly as Christians, and we're that's our podcast, right? Two Christian guys talking about the news and culture that matter to our listeners. If we're going to approach things, and we should as Christians, right? We shouldn't take off our Christian cap when we engage in politics. And I'm very clearly, and I know you would agree with me on this, we're both of the persuasion we oppose the whole idea of Christian nationalism and what's developed with that.
Yeah.
At the same time, our Christian beliefs influence how we approach politics, not in the sense of trying to establish a theocratic government. We're waiting for King Jesus to return. But in the sense of desiring that we take what Jesus told about how we should live, and we apply that into how we engage in politics and how we would ideally like to see politicians engage in politics. But certainly
Right.
it comes back to, it doesn't really matter if our politicians are nasty or mean or whatever. It rests on us, how are we going to approach it as Christians? Because if all the Christians in this country approached it differently and spoke in a way that was Christ-like about our political enemies, if we realize that Jesus' command in the Sermon on the Mount to love our enemies includes our political enemies, how different would it be? And how much would it even maybe deflate some of the anger we see in our politicians, because they'd realize they had this huge group of people who wanted no part in what they were doing.
Right, and maybe, and not to take issue with your terminology, but Maybe the problem is the word enemies. We used
Yes,
to say
exactly.
opponents,
Yeah,
you know.
totally agree. Totally agree. Yeah.
And so can we go on? If we don't win on November 5th, what are we going to do the day after? You know, I know that it's customary for the politician, the losing politician, to say, I will work with so and so to do that. But then they go into another political speech about how they're going to continue fighting for all the things that just lost. And so that civility has to be matched with action. If we really believe that we've got to do better than we've been doing, then it starts at the bottom, but it needs to go all the way to the top.
Yes.
And that's just American.
Yeah.
That's just American. I remember I wrote some pretty frisky columns back in the early 2000s for the College Republicans, but I remember chastising the Kerry supporters. This was the Bush-Kerry election in 04. Acting like they were all going to the gulag if George W. Bush won the election. And how unreasonable that is, because there's people that actually lived in countries with gulags, and we don't have that, you know.
Yes, thankfully.
Now, it doesn't mean we shouldn't be vigilant for those kinds of overreaches and things like that, but we still have a participatory democracy. And the other thing about participation is it requires cooperation. Meaningful democratic participation always requires participation from people on both sides.
Yes.
And we need to get back to that. We need to remember that if we're
Yeah.
going to volunteer at the polls, or we're going to, you know, if we're going to organize people to go and vote for our preferred candidate or whatever. Just know that we're doing that for everybody, even if we haven't thought about that in a while, you
Yeah.
know.
It certainly is a wonderful opportunity in that if we could do that. And like you said, what happens the day after the election? One thing that sort of become a little tradition of mine, I'll post something on social media the day after, just putting on my pastor hat and saying, let's pray for the new president. We couldn't do that last time because, it was several days later that we actually had a result established. It was like 3 or 4 days before it was generally accepted, and of course went on beyond that. That's another segment. But I've tried to do that. I think I've done that actually since maybe even the first time President Obama won. And then when President Trump won 8 years later. And certainly when we finally, at some point in the Electoral College process, I wrote a number of pieces on Open for Business this last election. And, we needed to pray for President Biden. I think one thing that we can do, and I hope we do as Christians going into this election, is whether we feel great about the election results, whether we hate them, the best thing we can do, and we'll get back to this at the end of this show, is pray for them. And I think on that note, show confidence that we serve the risen Lord who, whether we have President Biden for another 4 years, or we have President Trump for another 4 years. And it sounds kind of funny, I can say for another 4 years on either of them, but whichever one goes back to the White House for the next 4 years.
Paging Grover Cleveland.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. It was so good 100 plus years ago, we'll do it again. Whichever one we have, we need to pray for that president, and we need to genuinely act like we believe that Jesus is still on the throne either way.
Yeah, that's just it. Let's live in love and not in fear.
Yes.
I think that's the best way to end that right there, and we'll come back to this, I'm
Yeah.
sure.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. Don't you feel peaceful now, comrade?
I feel like you shouldn't have any more coffee.
Well, as long as I'm enjoying my coffee and my Izzy, although Izzy doesn't have any caffeine.
Yeah, it's good though.
We're making jokes, but we're doing that using English. And
Presumably.
presumably, on this show, at least, we're doing that. And sort of tying that into our last segment, one thing that someone listening to us may have noticed that we both do differently, but it goes back to what I remember learning back in language arts in grade school, is that there was a particular way you addressed the president and several other offices, like, for example, Speaker of the House, same custom, that you continue to apply the title to the person after that person leaves office. So, for example, the way I always learned it there, I mean, we had, I'm trying to think who all was still alive when I was born, but you had, of course, let's see, Nixon was still alive. So President Nixon, we had President Carter still alive, President Ford was still alive, President Reagan was in office when I was born. Then you had President Bush, President Clinton, President Bush again, another Bush. Then we had President Obama, President Trump, and of course, all those hadn't been in office at that point. But the thing that I'd learned was, if you were talking about president, and of course that also goes for presidents who had already passed away,
Yeah.
you referred to them as President so and so, right? If I'm talking about President Roosevelt, he's President Roosevelt. I don't say former President Roosevelt, I say President Roosevelt. And something I'd noticed, and it was just sticking in my craw, was that there seems to be this trend now where we refer to former presidents by the title former president rather than just giving them the proper honorific of President so and so. And that bothers me, comrade.
There might be some of that animosity, coming in there that reflects that convention, because there's so many people. It was fashionable for a few years though, there, and it started with Bush, and it just ballooned to say he's not my president, you know,
Yes.
or even on the good side they'd say that's my president. And so you wouldn't give the president title to the, so far we've had only guys. Okay, well, we're gonna have a woman president sooner or later. We don't say Mr. President or President Trump or President whoever. And I think you're right. We need to get back to that. The only defense that I could think of, which I thought of before the show, is that there was some dispute about the most recent elections because they've been very close in a lot of states, and you're trying to distinguish from the one who's sitting in office from the one who was sitting in office. But then again, not accepting the results is a hallmark of, again, not using the honorific president whoever. So, again, that's, we need to have, I would say, a better attitude. I would say for us Christians, a better Christian attitude about what God is up to, even though a lot of this stuff is our own nonsense we shouldn't blame God for. But, let's act like the adults we are, and act formal. And, even, dare I say, I'm sounding like you again, but the people not helping us in this regard are the national media, because their bias is usually fairly evident to most people. And if they choose not to accord respect to somebody, or if they choose to focus on a particularly unflattering story or an aspect of a story, or if they even plan to leave out true contextual details of a particular story, they can frame the way ordinary people think, and write and interact about whatever goes on. So that's a problem as well. I know that's a bigger discussion than just a linguistic thing that you started with, but it's all the same.
Yeah, it all comes together. I mean, the changes that we're seeing in our language more generally are all being influenced by the different ideological waves that we have going through our culture. Another one, and I'm trying to remember exactly how I heard it. It was actually concerning an upcoming Cardinals game, and they were doing some kind of sponsorship that was about raising funds or food for food banks in town.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the exact term they used. It was something like, we are trying to help people with nutritional impairment or something like that.
Yeah.
And it struck me because what they were really trying to say is, we're trying to help people who are hungry.
Yeah.
But we've become so touchy in how we use language. I know, I mean, I'm not saying anything new to get on the hobby horse of attacking our politically correct language, but I think it shows on all these things how we're making our language less useful. Because to say every time I refer to President Trump, former President Trump, just makes the language harder to actually get through, and then you just cut off the honorific in general, and it leads to
Just
degrading
boom.
civility and so on.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to help people who are starving in the community, talking about nutritional impairment or something like that, it sounds like they have some kind of intestinal disease.
Yeah,
They
or
just
some.
need food.
Yeah. If they need food, they're hungry. Yeah.
Yeah, and it just strikes me there's so many cases where we see that sort of thing now, where we've made stuff so convoluted because we're trying to drive home an ideological point or not offend someone or whatever, that there's common sense ways to say things that shouldn't be offensive, that should be straightforward, that we now can't even say.
And I think what we'll come to agree on is that when language is imprecise, or when language leads to confusion in service to sensitivity or something, then we need to get rid of it because communicating is about being understood, to understand and to be understood.
Right.
So, there's nothing wrong with being diplomatic, showing compassion, those types of things. But let's communicate clearly. And because when I was a little kid, it was sanitation engineer. And one of the arguments that you can make is, well, if we stopped disrespecting the garbage man, we could just say garbage man and be done with it. He
Right.
doesn't, the only way we're tr the only reason we're trying to make him sound more important is that somehow we say, oh, he has to have a management job, or he has to have a college degree to be important. Why don't we just tear down the barrier of deciding who's important and who's not, and then say what we mean? I'm thankful for the guy that picks up my garbage, or the woman who picks up my garbage if it's a woman. I'm thankful for my male person that, they don't need to be making six figures in New York City on Times Square to be important.
Right.
Everybody's important. Everybody has a dignity. And we're Christians, of course, we believe that. Everyone has an invaluable dignity given by God, not so much centered in what they do. So,
Yeah,
anyway, that was a side rant, but.
I think it really does hit to the heart of it, though. I mean, it may expose as much about us and the unfortunate things in our hearts when we feel like, oh, I need to come up with a title that makes someone sound like they're doing something different than they are, because if I don't, then clearly they're not worthy. And it's sort of, well, no, you don't have to have the title. You don't have to have the word engineer in your title to be worthy. You don't need to have a certain number of syllables in your title to be worthy. You're worthy because God made you and loves you, and the Father sent his son to die for you. That's why you're worthy. And
Hold on, now you're about to start sounding like a pastor. What's going on here?
what can I say? I'm a theological engineer.
There you go. That's about right.
But I think, I mean, I'm just. You got to the heart of that already. I mean, that's where we need to rest. And if we do that, then maybe instead of trying to come up with highfalutin titles, We could instead just actually love people.
Bold strategy. We'll see if it works out for them.
Well, stay tuned. Also, stay tuned to what's happening in your local weather, because the weather's changing every day. What do you know? That's what weather does. And you may wonder what your weather is doing. But here's the thing, comrade. Did you know that every time you go to a place like weather.com and check your weather, that they are feeding that information into the monsters of Big Brother, the different tracking software that packages up information about you so that it can be sold? You are being turned into the product every time you go to one of the major weather sites. And you can see the results. You go on Facebook afterwards, you go on Google afterwards, you go just to the news website, and what do you see in the advertising? Suddenly, you were curious, you were talking to a friend who's on a trip to Cancun, you looked up the weather, the next thing you know, you're getting advertisements for tickets to see, to go to Cancun. You think, well, I can't afford that, and anyway, why are you showing that to me? And you know what has happened? Comrade, you've become the product.
And by the way, I still see four lights. There are only four lights.
Yes.
There are not five lights.
Yeah, we have stage lights here. And of course, our Trekkie friends know exactly what that's referring to. And you don't want to live on Cardassia, do you, comrade?
No.
No, of course you don't want to live on Cardassia. And so one way you can stand up against the future of the Cardassian Union here on Earth is by going to faithtree.com/weatherdesk. That's faithtree.com/weatherdesk. Check your weather someplace. It's not going to turn you into the product. Rather, we are going to share the weather with you and just be grateful that you came and share scripture when you come.
Yeah, man, those aren't the cookies that I like necessarily. No. Different cookies.
Say no to those cookies. Get a bag of Famous Amos instead. How about that?
Fair enough.
Comrade, this is just a brief little segment, but have you gotten the impression over the years I kind of am a keyboard geek?
Yeah, Tim.
Yeah, I love keyboards. I mean, I love keyboards.
And you like the clicky ones, too. That's what we're talking about.
Right, clicky keyboards, mechanical keyboards.
It has to be clicky.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only way to go, clicky keyboard. And if you used a computer 40, 50 years ago, that's what you got, right? If you bought an old IBM PC, or if you're working on an old mainframe, you had this giant keyboard that was perfect for defending yourself in the zombie apocalypse, no problem. And it would run. Lots of people still have those keyboards. They're still working. They're that good. But then everyone figured out how to cheapen keyboards. You got these ones that basically now are a printed circuit board with some silicone on them that presses up and down, and they call that a keyboard.
Yeah, the new Apple ones, they don't even make sound. It's not good.
Yeah, I mean, keyboards have just gotten a lot worse over the years. And so there's this whole realm that's reappeared over the last 10, 15 years or so called the mechanical keyboard, that is where people are making keyboards like they used to make them. And one of the companies, actually the company I believe that really could be credited with bringing that back into the mainstream in the late 2000s, I suppose, was DOS Keyboard. A company called Metadot that is behind it. And they started making keyboards that looked modern, had modern conveniences like a volume control and play and pause buttons and all that sort of stuff we expect on keyboards.
Yeah.
But each key had a switch in it. And now lots of people are doing it. But a few years ago, you said, I want a mechanical keyboard. And most people looked at you and like, what in the world are you talking
about?
Yeah,
do you want a horse and a cart too while you're at it, you know?
Exactly. And now it's a trendy thing. And part of that's gamers. Gamers love mechanical keyboards because they can shoot their weapons faster and so on. But people may or may not know that follow the podcast. I actually have a whole review guide of some of my favorite mechanical keyboards over on Open for Business. I'll put it in the show notes. And the reason I wanted to mention this right now, I just got done reviewing the DOS keyboard Pro 6 Pro, which is a really, really nice keyboard. It has an aluminum top plate, clicky keys, really nice keys that light up with just a soothing white light that looks like it would have been designed by Apple, and a really, really satisfying volume wheel that you can turn to lower and raise the volume and click to mute. So I'll link to the whole review.
Oh, is this a testy, Tim?
It is a Testy Tim review, yeah, yes. I was testy with it, and I've reviewed a number of their keyboards, and I consistently find they don't have all the features that some of them do, but I find there's something very, very satisfying about a DOS keyboard. It's a just very solidly built keyboard.
We both adore the clicky keys, and don't be misled by Testy Tim. It doesn't mean he's grumpy. It means he's testing something out. Yeah, so
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I may be grumpy, but you just never know.
rawr. And what I wanted to say was that the affection for the clicky keys, the nostalgia for that, is probably related to the nostalgia for the old typewriters. Because with a typewriter, it was so great. You could always, a mechanical typewriter, you could always tell that you were accomplishing something. Your machine was typing exactly what you pushed if it was working. And I'm getting some work done. And even I do the clicky sounds on the Apple keyboard on my iPhone. I know we love that.
Yeah, it just feels good, and it actually our brains can pull that feedback in, and it makes us better at what we're doing. It's not purely just enjoyable. One thing that you can do is you can actually go online and do a typing test pretty easily. There's some that actually turn it into a competitive game even. And if you do that, and when I review keyboards, I actually test how fast I can type on them. I can type notably faster when I'm using a mechanical keyboard than say a standard laptop keyboard or a standard keyboard, even a full size one that isn't mechanical. That feedback, that the clicking and the movement where your fingers can go down further on it and so on, it really does make a genuine difference.
Because it lets you know whether you pressed it or not.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
that's.
And so anyway, this I just reviewed this DOS Keyboard 6 Pro. I'll put the link in the show notes. Again, it's a very satisfying to type on keyboard. And I wanted to mention it in our show tonight because when they sent out the keyboard for review, they asked if our readers and listeners might be interested in getting early access to their Amazon Prime Day prices. And so that's $20 to $30 off DOS keyboards. Yeah, and just to be clear, we're not getting any kickback for this. We're not going to get a dime for mentioning this. We just are intrigued by these keyboards, and we want our listeners to be able to benefit from it. So that will be in the show notes as well.
And we do this with a lot of things that we like. We don't get paid, although there'd be nothing wrong with doing that per se. But we just like the things we like, and so we're ready to, if we find something that we really love, we're ready to give the credit and call it out and say thank you to that company for doing that. So,
Yeah, absolutely.
and I wanted to mention before we move on, the noted journalist Peter Jennings, may he rest in peace. He could type so fast. He only typed with two fingers, but he could type 120 words a minute with two fingers. No kidding.
How did his fingers hold up to that?
I never saw it with my eyes, so I can't prove it, but I read it in an article when he died. Just unbelievable.
Comrade, we know the real sport. We've been talking at the Olympics, but we know there's a real sport, right?
The one true sport,
The one true
baseball,
sport.
Cardinals baseball, yeah.
Exactly. Cardinals baseball. That is the true sport. And, well, what do you make of our Redbirds?
Well, they're on fire, Tim. The last time we talked about this, I needed to encourage you, to talk you off the ledge. And now the Cardinals themselves have walked off the ledge and started playing like a real team. Since Mother's Day on May the 12th, the Cardinals are now 14 games above 500,
That is amazing.
with the best record in the league since that time. So we're within 5 games of first place now, and we're above 500, and we are showing the Washington Nationals at the moment what for. So it's good. We're gonna, I think we're gonna, oh, we gotta play Kansas City, and then we're finishing up with a 4-gamer, including a doubleheader against the Cubs. and then rolling into the All-Star break, which, thank goodness, they need a break, and we always play better in the second half anyway. So there we go.
Yeah, I'm glad you talked me off. I was about to jump out that one story window there, a few weeks ago. It was bad.
You know, I always fall out the window when you preach, so.
Well, I try to make sure you get rested. I know you're on summer break as a teacher. I have to help out.
It's like the big blue sleeping pill we used to talk about in seminary, but audible.
Yes, I do remember that. Well, certainly the Cardinals don't seem to be asleep. There are still a few mysteries to me. I don't understand why they keep bringing Giovanni Gallegos out. I really don't. Maybe you can help me understand that one. I mean, to me, it seems like you bring out Gallegos and you know at least one run will score, probably more.
Well, what's happening here is he's coming back from injury. And you got to build a guy like that back up. So they're bringing him in low leverage situations. Either we're getting blown out or we're blowing the other guys out. Granted, we have not done a lot of blowing teams out. That's why we have the worst run differential of any winning team, in Major League Baseball. We have the same run differential as the Pittsburgh Pirates, and the
Oh,
Pirates are terrible.
well, that's terrible.
So, it's really weird because we win close games and then we get our butts kicked. So figure that one out. Can I say butts on the podcast? That's a little crass.
Well, you're now in arrears on what you're saying.
Oh, groan.
It's an interesting team. It has some weird quirks to it.
There's a weird vibe, yeah.
Maybe another thing you can talk me from my half a story. I mean, I wasn't going to jump out this ground floor window, but now I'm like on the window that just has a little concrete block right at the floor level I'm thinking about jumping out of.
Oh, Pete's sake.
I'm a little worried. We just saw the other day Lance Lynn got blown out. I think one of the worst innings we've seen. And then right before that, we've seen several less stellar outings out of our ace, Sonny Gray. I mean, he's been phenomenal. I'm so glad we signed him. And I'm
Hey,
glad
we
we,
still won the game,
yeah,
so.
I'm glad we signed Lynn too. I mean, I think he's been good. But are they wearing out? Do we have any concern going into the second half?
I'm not concerned about the second half, but I think we should be glad the second half is here. I think that's all we're seeing there. The key to any successful individual pitching outing is fastball location. It doesn't have to do anything with breaking balls or changeups, but if you can't locate the fastball, you cannot throw the other pitches off of that. So you just get so messed up. One time, and I've told this story before, but a rookie went into the Atlanta Braves spring training with the great Greg Maddux. And he said, "Hey, Greg, what's the secret to pitching successfully in the major leagues?" And Greg said, "Locate your fastball." And the kid said, "Really? That's it?" He goes, "Yeah, locate your fastball." And the kid said, "I don't believe you." And Greg said, "That's how I knew that kid wasn't going to go anywhere. Because if you can't locate your fastball, you can't throw the other pitches off of it. And if you can't throw off the timing of these batters in the major leagues, you're going to get shelled." So that's just. So I'm not worried about Sonny. Probably just needs a break. Little more worried about Lance because he doesn't have. What I'm noticing is he doesn't really have the speed variation to get guys off his pitches. They're all basically in the same speed range. So he might want to work on taking a little off or adding some on to certain pitches to get them off his particular pitches.
Yeah, that makes sense. My big hope for Lynn is just that we can see more of what we've seen in the past with him, which is he eats up innings without usually letting the game go completely out of control. So hopefully that's the case again in the second half.
He's been really solid overall, so I'm not overly terrified about it. I just know he was throwing a max four seam fastball. It was getting up there at 94, but it was poorly located. And that rookie Wood for the Nationals just
Ooh,
golfed
yeah.
it over the fence yesterday.
That
So
hurt.
it's like when he's turning around 94, like he knew it was coming, like the catcher told him what Lance was going to throw. That's not good. You want him to be behind the fastball and in front of the breaking ball. Done.
Yeah, definitely. Just one sort of positive shout out, and anyone that's followed the podcast knows I'm a big fan of Matt Carpenter. I've been really pleased. In fact, and maybe this isn't the biggest commendation because it hasn't been Goldschmidt's best year, but as of a couple of weeks ago, Goldie and Carp were faced with the same batting average. And especially for a man who most of his career has been a starter and now is doing a lot of pinch hitting and that sort of thing, I think that Carp has been a really nice addition to the team this year.
Yeah, I have no complaints about where he is. And even if the numbers don't look that great, he has been super clutch in some key moments. With Goldschmidt, yeah, you're a little bit worried about the batting average, but this is a career 290 hitter. And he always does this. He's going to have a torrid July. He's going to have a torrid August. He's going to have a solid September. And he's going to be right around that 290 mark like he always is. He had a lower batting average at the same point in time in his MVP season a couple years ago than he has right now. So,
Nice.
Paul Goldschmidt, never bet against Paul Goldschmidt. It's just not a good idea. Even in this last week, there was a kid that tried to sneak a fastball by him because that's the book on him now. He's old. He can't catch up with a fastball. And it was like 97, and it was away from him. And he just said, "You don't think I've seen a 97 mile an hour fastball before, kid?" and golfed it into the seats. So, not worried about Goldie, not worried about Carp, happy with Carp, happy with all the guys right now. Like we said, they're on fire. So,
Well, just briefly before we move on, any other sports news you'd like to hit, comrade?
yeah, Caitlin Clark, the phenom, the potential goat in waiting in women's basketball, has recorded the first triple double that's having double digits in at least three statistical categories by a rookie in the history of the WNBA.
Nice.
Never been done before. Just yesterday against the New York Liberty, she scored 15 points, 11 assists, and 10 rebounds. So unbelievable. And of course, the Fever won the game, and they're sitting in playoff position right now. So.
Well, from what you said earlier, I'm still pretty clueless on basketball, but from what you said earlier in the season, that's pretty incredible, I think. So
She's learning fast, folks.
nice. We've been gabbing about our summer sermon series, so I'll just mention that this episode is recorded at Little Hills Church, and it's a blessing to get to record here when Jason is in town in person that we can use this venue for that. And so if you're looking for a church, we have members who live around the country and even in different countries. We are a hybrid church that's both online and in person. So whether you're in town here in St. Charles, part of the St. Louis area, or elsewhere, we would love to have you take part with us. And you can find out more at littlehills.church. Well, comrade, we do come to our Bible segment, and we wanted to come back really to something that we started out the show with. We talked about the assassination attempt on President Trump, and whether we're talking about President Trump or we're talking about President Biden, we're talking about President Bush, we're talking about President Obama. This is something I know I've come back to in ministry over the years now, because we have gotten to the point where it often is basically, I'm going to pray for my guy and I'm going to pray against the other guy. And I always find it helpful, and I try to say this consistently every 4 years, because sometimes my guy is the one that wins, sometimes my guy is the one that loses. But I try to say it every 4 years then. Scripture doesn't call us to honor the people God allows to govern us if we happen to like them, right? And that's what we see in 1 Timothy chapter 2. Maybe, should I read it to get us
Yeah, why
down here?
don't you just read it for
Yeah.
us?
Paul says, first of all, then I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgivings be made for all people, for kings and all who are in high positions, that we may lead a peaceful and quiet life, godly and dignified in every way. This is good and is pleasing in the sight of God, our Savior, who desires all people to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth.
One thing that strikes me as terribly interesting in our context is that the guy that Paul is referring to, or the people in authority that Paul is referring to, were really, really bad, like actively persecuting Christians, murdering them, throwing them in jail, especially the murder part. So when he says, pray for all those in authority, that's a real challenge if they just killed your friend last week, or your mom, or your cousin, and he still says it. We do not have as many challenging things as we have going on in our country. We are not facing that.
Right.
We should be able to do this much more readily than we have been, praying for all those in authority, including President Biden, Speaker Pelosi, Speaker Johnson, Senator McConnell, whoever the leader of the Democrats in the Senate, I don't even know anymore.
Senator Schumer.
Schumer, okay. Yeah. Old Chucky, I should remember that. Love Chuck Schumer. Oh, I have a story about that. Let me segue into a story about that. So I was in college once, long, long ago, and I studied political science at the University of Missouri. And I was in a class with my favorite professor. It was either Southern politics or it was Congress and legislative policy. But either way, Senator Schumer came up and I go, ah, I really don't like that guy. And my professor got really serious and he said, hey, you may not agree with Schumer, but he tries really hard and he does good work for his constituents. And I don't want you to talk that way. I keep going back to that because I have I haven't really disclosed many of my political beliefs on the air, but I have no particular, just natural affection for Chuck Schumer. But every time I get a chance to be like grumpy about Chuck Schumer, I just remember what the good professor told me when I was in college. Mm. Like, because he wasn't personally connected to him either, but he said, does good for his constituents, and he tries hard. And I thought, okay, when have I ever thought that about anyone? They try to do their best. They make a good effort each day. Maybe if we knew that, we would be a little more gentle on some of our leaders.
Yes, yeah. I think, in a way, this kind of goes full circle with how we did begin, right? Because we were talking about trying to tone things down. And I think we can get into such a place where we demonize those whom we disagree with. We just assume there's nothing good in this person. This person is just evil and wicked and is scum of the earth. And how did that person ever become a leader? And you've said several important things, one of which is the people that Paul is encouraging Timothy to pray for, that's actually a pretty good description of them in a lot of ways, because they're literally killing Christians. They're opposing them ideologically. They're not saying mean things about them. We've talked about language on this show. It's not, you know, they're not taking in their preferred way of speaking about something. They're killing them. And Paul says, pray for them. And so at a base level, it doesn't even matter if the person really is bad. But how often is it that there's an awful lot that's happening with these leaders where they're just trying to do their job like we try to do ours? And there's some things we're going to disagree with, but there's a lot of stuff they're all doing for their constituents. And not all of them. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like they're all good.
Yeah.
But I think what sort of it reminds me, I remember listening on KMOX our famed 50,000-watt AM station here in town, a number of years ago, back when Congressman William Lacey Clay was still in office, and Congresswoman Ann Wagner, they're both on the radio together. And if you know them, one's from a Democratic family, longtime Democrat, political player. The other, Congresswoman Wagner, she's been in the Republican political machine for decades now here in Missouri. You don't think of them as going together very well. But as they were talking on the radio, for one, it was a great picture of civility and respect. They were very, very respectful of each other. But the other thing was, it was clear it wasn't a show. They had been working together because they were, besides the really partisan stuff, they were just working on issues that concern Missouri. They were part of, there are two parts of our congressional delegation here in Missouri, and they had clearly been working together on a regular basis for matters that weren't Democrat or Republican, but were Missouri issues, and had a personal relationship through that. And it was so striking to me. So, sort of what you were saying with Senator Schumer, that, you know, it's a lot more complex than we often frame it. And I think that's where it comes back to what we're being encouraged to do here. Can we start praying for our representatives and senators, even when we don't like them, and our presidents and our Supreme Court justices and our governors and mayors? And can we just actually hear out what we're being told in scripture, which is pray for them? And if we spent a lot more time praying for them and wishing them well, and a lot less time trying to figure out what's wrong with them, well, at the very least, we'd be being faithful in that. But God has a funny way of using us being faithful to what he actually calls us to do pretty amazing things.
I keep seeing the same commercial. This is where it's hitting the rubber's hitting the road in my life. I keep seeing the same commercial, and if I see the same commercial for the same guy, I'm gonna flip out. I'm just tired of seeing it. This guy's running for governor or something, you know, and I'm like, this commercial is very annoying. I'm pretty sure if I ran into this person, I would not immediately like him. And I thought, maybe I need to stop and pray for that dude. So that's my lesson going home tonight, is like, I'm gonna pray for that dude. And every time that annoying commercial comes up, I'm like, do you really need a, I'm gonna give it away, but do you really need a flamethrower? Like, really? So some of the commercials, you know, it's
Comrade, you know, the sad thing is, I'm not even sure who you're referring to because there's so many politicians with flamethrowers nowadays. I
Are we in the flamethrower era of American politics? Did Taylor initiate this when I wasn't paying attention?
Yes, yeah, from the Reputations era, probably.
Is Taylor in her flamethrower era as well? That's crazy. So if I see the flamethrower guy again, I'm probably gonna have a conniption, but then I will pray. The next thing I will do is pray. Flamethrowers.
Yeah. So whenever you see flamethrowers, don't throw flame wars. Pray.
Yeah, and here's a little practical advice for the audience before we wrap this up. Don't argue on Facebook. There's no point. We talked about being the product before. On Facebook, you're definitely the product. Don't argue with people on Facebook. You're just wasting your life. If you're
Yeah.
gonna do that, argue on Mastodon, right, Tim?
Hey. Amen. Amen, comrade. That is so true.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's
Argue
right.
on Mastodon.
Argue on the Fediverse.
Yes.
It sounds like an MCU movie. I don't even
It
know what's
does, doesn't
going
it?
on.
Yes. It's probably phase six of the MCU.
Yeah, don't
Yeah.
confuse
Yeah.
me at the end of the
Yeah.
show.
Yeah. As we're wrapping up, I'll just mention if you haven't already followed us on the Fediverse, you can follow Open for Business, which includes links to all of our columns and Zippy the Wonder Snail. And it's at OFB at faithtree.social. You can follow us on any Fediverse supporting platform you might be on. Generally, that's Mastodon. In the future, it'll be Threads, but you should follow us on the Fediverse. And it really is nice because we are not the product there. We're simply people communicating. And I do like that. And I think that would do a lot of good for us.
And by the way, it's FEDI, not the cheese, not feta. Oh,
Yeah, the
cheesy.
Fediverse.
That's
We are in a very cheesy place on this episode.
yeah, all right.
And so I should just mention, it's been so great, comrade. I always love getting to do this with you. And I hope our listeners love it as well. So they should check us out, right?
Yeah,
On.
on any podcasting app that you like, I can't even do that commercial like you can, but whatever your preferred podcasting hosting thing is, go find us there,
Yeah.
whether it be Spotify or Google, blah, 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 or whatever that other one
Yeah,
is,
especially blah, blah, blah. Yeah, check it out.
blah, blah, blah is the best one, obviously.
And of course, snail.zip as well. Check us out there. Have a wonderful day. We're so glad that you're with us. Bye.